Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. Just kidding, I didn't mean to be that low. I don't know, I'm still working on it, leave me alone. I am your host, Eddie Villeneuve, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Francois Williams.
Francois!
I don't even know.
Hey, I'll take it because this time it's not an insult.
It's not. The guy had a very southern kind of appropriate. Either way, we're talking about, we got an early access screening to Knives Out, so we're excited to talk about that film and dive into that because, yeah, it's worth talking about. So, Spence, take it away.
The Filmosopher's podcast is mysteriously and suddenly brought to you.
I'll tell you what.
Brought to you by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. Each Wednesday morning, check to see if there are any dead bodies in the study. Then head on over and download the latest episode on your favorite streaming platforms such as Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom.
And Pandora!
There it is. Look, we're not saying we know how to cover up a murder, but I mean, we've seen how most of the movies do it, so, you know, draw your own conclusions.
Thanks, Spence. So dark.
Hey, fitting the theme. Connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/philosophy101 so we can tell you how. Ooh. Finally, check out some of the hidden clues about which one of us is next.
Spencer. It's Spencer.
I'm not next for murder. It's you. Head on over to our website and check out our entire episode list at filmlosophers.com.
That's right. We got over 190 episodes, including our previous episode that we just did, where we did a review on the incredible movie Jojo Rabbit, lesson 194. So if you haven't had a chance to, go check that one out after you listen to this episode, because we got so much to talk to you about. As well, we want to give a special happy Thanksgiving to all the listeners who are out there listening to the episode either before or the day of this episode dropping. So happy Thanksgiving, and we cannot wait to talk about Knives Out. Knives Out is one of those movies that has been really highly talked about. A lot of people have been wondering what this movie is about, what it's worth watching it, because in all honesty, there aren't as many proper like whodunit movies out there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of them are like really creepy, or there's like some chaos involved. The last one I think was what was that movie with Ben Affleck where he played or his wife played a weirdo who just completely went AWOL and left him to, I forget the name of that movie. Oh my gosh, I never saw it, mind you.
Yeah, so that's really hard to remember the movies. The
Gone Girl.
Yeah.
Gone Girl.
Oh, okay.
2014's Gone Girl. I think that was honestly one of the last ones, because even that god-awful movie A Simple Favor was horrible.
Oh, it was so bad. And it wasn't even really like worth figuring out in the end.
No, not at all. So, we got a chance to recently watch Knives Out, and needless to say, we are both super stoked to talk about this movie. So, before we do, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
When renowned crime novelist Harlan Thrombey is found dead at his estate just after his 85th birthday, the inquisitive and debonair detective is mysteriously enlisted to investigate. From Harlan's dysfunctional family to his devoted staff, Blanc shifts through a web. Who's reading this?
Go ahead.
He goes through a web of red herrings and self-serving lies to uncover the truth behind Harlan's untimely death.
Written and directed by Rian Johnson. Yes, that Rian Johnson of The Last Jedi's infamy. Hmm. The film stars Daniel Craig, Chris Evans, Ana de Armas, Jamie Lee Curtis, Michael Shannon, Don Johnson. Don Johnson, when was the last time you seen that man in a movie?
I don't
know. Tony Collette, Lakeith Stanfield, Catherine Langford, Jaden Martell, and, of course, Christopher Plummer. A little piece of information about the film. This is actually Frank Oz's first movie in over 20 years that he's actually in as a person and not just a voiceover, which his last appearance was in 1998's Blues Brothers 2000, which is weird. I don't know why they called it Blues Brothers 2000 and it was done in 1998, but...
It was close enough. Everyone was doing 2000 everything back then.
It's funny that you mentioned that. I remember... This morning, I was actually explaining to my niece what Y2K was. And she's like, I don't think we've talked about that in history books yet. I'm like, let me tell you the scare of the Y2K bug. Shall I? Mm. this film operated under the working title of Morning Bell. And it's actually set for a wide release of, if you're listening to this episode day of, today, November 27th. It's going to be in wide releases and theaters all over the place. But like I said, we got a chance to check it out a little early. And I'm so glad we did. Because in all honesty, if I had to wait until we had to go pay for this movie, like when it came out,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if I would have been as excited to see it as I am to rewatch it now. Like, because I know without a shadow of a doubt, I'm going to go re-see this movie. Like, I'm going to go watch it again. And I guess that just speaks to the impact this movie has had. Just so we make sure and put this out there, this is a non-spoiler review. So if you have any concerns about any information about the movie that'll give stuff away, and obviously because this is a mystery movie, a murder mystery whodunit type movie.
Yeah, all spoilers are very important.
Yeah, spoilers will kind of give away everything. Like, oh my gosh, we found out it was actually the drapes that killed him. Oh, like, no.
They were the drapes. They had the Doctor Strange magic.
Exactly. If they can do it in Rick and Morty, they can do it in this. So this is going to be a non-spoiler review, so you don't have to worry about any spoilers and whatnot. We may do an extra credit episode where we do talk about some of the things that we did find a little interesting in the way that Rian Johnson went about telling his unique story, but... As of now, you're safe.
For now.
jumping into like expectations and whatnot, I'm going to be pretty honest. So this movie ran on a $40 million budget, which, as odd as it sounds, that's not really a huge budget. Other than I'd say that's probably just the cost of the cast alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with names like Daniel Craig, Chris Evans, Jamie Lee Curtis, you know, Daniel Craig himself has been doing some really great stuff, and obviously he's carried the mantle of 007 for a while. Chris Evans, do we really need to go into who he's been for the last, 20 years? Ana de Armas, she had one of her big roles in the Blade Runner 2049 film. She was the AI that he would take with her all over the place. Jamie Lee Curtis, come on, original Scream Queen. Michael Shannon, you know, we got Emperor, you know, we got Zod, General Zod, and then obviously you bring in people like Christopher Plummer. Christopher Plummer is a thespian of an actor. This man has been doing roles ever since you and I were both just, you know, mere thoughts, you know, but he's an incredible actor, and I'm pretty sure he came in with a lot of expectations as well in terms of, you know, Moolah. Tony Collette, Don Johnson, Lakeith Stanfield, those are all, you know. But the fact that I think the majority of this film's budget was more so in the cast leads more to... Oh, and not even... I am so sorry. I am completely missing, you know, the big one here, which is one of the big ones, which is the actor who plays the detective. The detective, the one that is giving the questioning, that starts the questioning out.
Are you talking about Daniel Craig?
No. The other detective. Lakeith Stanfield.
You already said his name.
No, but I'm saying, though, he's been doing a lot of big things lately.
Yeah.
He's somebody who just, as of recently, within the last few years, he's the one who did Sorry to Bother You.
Yeah.
I was thinking of
everybody
other...
everybody loved.
the movie everybody got weirded out by.
It was a very weird movie. I kind of liked it though.
But like, no, but like, he's another one who is doing really great things. Like,
yeah,
like I was saying earlier, Don Johnson. I haven't really seen anything with Don Johnson in. Toni Collette. I mean, is she doing anything lately? Like, I don't know, but I know that, you know, Lakeith is doing big stuff. Jamie Lee Curtis is already in talks of doing the sequel to the last Halloween film she just did.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Plummer came in to redo all of Kevin Spacey's scenes in that one movie. It's great. So the cast here is incredible. And I'm excited that there's a film where the budget was focused more. There's a part of the budget that goes to that, but there wasn't so much of a weight of it on the script writing and everything else. Like, the script was just naturally good. It didn't have a lot of like, oh, well, let's throw this much more into this to get CG here. Let's do this. This is just a really great storytelling of a film, to be plain and simple.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't. Did you get a chance to see Murder on the Orient Express?
Mm-hmm.
I had heard bits and pieces, Agatha Christie, you know, adaptation. There had been millions of those. Hercules Poirot was the name of the detective in that one. But I really liked for somebody like Rian Johnson to come in and just say, hey, I'm writing this. Let's create it. It's not based on anything. It's not based on a book. At least I don't think so. It's not based on anybody's like pre-established work. This is Rian Johnson coming in and saying, yeah, I could do that. Cool. And knocks, you know, creates what he does. It's impressive. I feel, and I say this very haphazardly,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like I may have to rewatch The Last Jedi to see if, like, maybe I kind of missed something, because The Last Jedi was still bad.
So here's the thing about this.
Uh-huh.
Like, kind of skipping over to, like, my impressions after I left the theater.
Uh-huh.
I feel like after watching this movie, I have a better understanding of what he was trying to do with The Last Jedi. Not that I'm saying it's good or something, but just saying that I feel like I understand that he was trying to bring something like this, where this movie is kind of always trying to keep you off your seat of what's going to happen next type thing. I think he's trying to bring that to Star Wars, because a lot of how I feel about Last Jedi is what's going to happen next, but in a really irritated fashion.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what he was trying to do there.
Yeah.
Except it was bad there.
True.
Yeah.
Here's the bottom line for me with Rian Johnson. The Last Jedi. So if I could go on a slight tangent here,
mm-hmm.
The Last Jedi really kind of messed me up,
mm-hmm.
In terms of like everything Star Wars. Like, I think it was just a bad year for Star Wars movies, because you had The Last Jedi.
Oh, that came out with Solo, didn't it?
I think it did. Came out the same year as Solo. And I'm like, no. You know? I never saw any of his other movies. I did see Looper. And that was interesting. That was with who's the guy who played Anakin?
Hayden Christensen was in that movie?
Yes.
Oh,
he was in that one.
I didn't know that.
Him and Jamie Bell. Jamie Bell's the guy. If you don't know him from other works, he's a UK actor, but he actually played the Thing in...
Are you sure you're not thinking about Jumper?
Oh, no. You're right. Looper.
With, yeah, that one has Joseph Gordon-Levitt
and Bruce Willis, Emily Blunt. You're right. I was thinking of...
Because I was like, I wanted to see Looper, and I was like, I don't remember him being in that.
Here's what I'm realizing. Rian Johnson works in making something great every other piece that he does. Because, so, he did The Brothers Bloom, which was really interesting. Then you had something called Terriers and the Mountain Goats, The Life of the World to Come. I don't know. And then you had Looper, which is good. And then after that, you had The Last Jedi, which was bad. And then you have Knives Out, which is good.
All right, so avoid the next...
Avoid the next Rian Johnson movie is what we're trying to say. But expectations, like, just going into it, honestly, I really was worried that this was going to be, because there's nothing to base it off of. So I couldn't read anything. I couldn't watch anything. I couldn't, there was nothing I could do to prepare me for whatever this was. Mm-hmm. All I knew was it was a whodunit movie. So this was my biggest concern. I did not want to spend 2 hours in a movie, because the movie is 2 hours and 10 minutes long. Mm-hmm. I did not want to spend 2 hours sitting through a movie after figuring it out in the first 10 minutes. I can't stand that. Like, there's a difference, and I tell this to people that I know. There's a difference between figuring out a movie and allowing yourself to go with the journey of the film. Figuring it out means this: the movie has screamed it out loud, like, "Oh my gosh, he did it!" But you'll never find out.
Yeah.
And then going on the journey is like, "All right, okay, I see what you're doing. All right, okay, keep going. Okay, all right." And I did not want to have that first experience with this movie, mm-hmm. that first one of like, "Oh my gosh, it's seriously broadcasting so loudly that this movie is already over." And I still got to sit through 2 more hours of this.
It's like, who did it? Was it the man with a dagger and the twirly mustache and a top hat? Like I get what you're saying. Like, nobody wants to sit through, like, that movie.
Unfortunately, it's the same mindset I had when it came to figuring out the whole situation with Incredibles 2. Like, it's obvious that the woman whose name Evelyn Dever or Evil Endeavor is the bad person.
I never put that together. Like, it wasn't like super hard to figure out who it was, but I never thought of, like, her name is Evil Endeavor.
Yeah, it literally says Evil.
That's so bad. Endeavor.
And I'm like, I gotta sit through the rest of this movie. Thankfully, Jack-Jack makes up for most of the fun in that film.
Jack-Jack.
You know, if Jack-Jack was literally a background character in this movie, I would have not had fun at all. Like, the woman who's trying to create this female empowerment is actually the villain behind it all. Like, oh yeah, that's a great message to put. So the fact that this movie was a whodunit movie, I just really did not want to make sure that I was going to have to sit through this movie, like, totally pouty face because of the fact that I figured it out already.
Right.
So that was my only expectation, to be quite honest. That was my only one. I didn't know about Rian Johnson's every other thing until now. I was looking at his IMDb. But, like, aside from that, that was it. What about you?
Going into it, I was just really excited to see Chris Evans as not Captain America for once, because it's been a while since I've seen him in anything where he wasn't Captain America.
Seriously. Like, he's tried to do a couple things here and there,
mm-hmm.
but it's literally been, like, all, like, he did Gifted, but that was like, that showed up for like a little bit. I think the biggest thing for me was like Snowpiercer.
Mm.
Snowpiercer was phenomenal. And that was right before Thor to the Dark World. Which, side note, Jamie Bell, the guy I was talking about earlier, he plays, like, Chris Evans' right-hand person in Snowpiercer.
Oh, okay.
So, but nobody really knows, like, he's not shouting it from the rooftops all the other projects that he was doing at the time.
Right.
Like, I'm looking at his, you know, repertoire here, and I'm like, you know, okay. Like, he did The Avengers, and then Captain America, First Avenger, and in between that, he did a movie called What's Your Number? I'm like, I don't remember that. Or Playing It Cool. But everything from 2019 down, 90% of 2019 through, let's see, 2011 has been mostly Marvel films. You know, obviously he has his role in Scott Pilgrim. People remember him there. The Losers, that was his first comic book film where he plays Jensen in The Losers. Oh, no, I take that back. I am so sorry. His first foray into comic book movies. Johnny Storm, Fantastic Four.
Yeah, it's been a while. I always, like, I knew they would never do this, but I always wish those two could have met.
Right?
That would have been interesting.
Like, buzz cut Chris Evans to, like, now muscular looking, because he's not that big in Fantastic Four. But now he's, I would have loved to have seen that. But no, I agree. Seeing him in something else other than a Marvel film, giving him access to be more than just the squeaky clean all-American for a change was probably my biggest one. Now that you're talking about, one of my biggest expectations as well, because like the trailer hooked me on that.
Yeah, especially like, with him just being like, "You can eat poop and you can eat poop." Like that was amazing.
Like, Chris, Captain America's cussing,
and he didn't have to say language or have anyone say it to him.
Exactly. So. But yeah, were there anything else?
No, that was really the big thing. I was like, this is what I'm here for. I'm here for Chris Evans.
And I mean, the whole cast in itself is interestingly cohesive. Like, you you look at the characters, you look at the people, and you're like, eh, okay. But then you're like, well, the mesh of them do look like you're like standard Northeastern dysfunctional family out there. So I mean, it looked like it was interesting. Like, they all look like they could be related.
Yeah,
to be quite frank.
Also, I thought, like, over the course of the movie, the size of the family was going to be a problem.
Yeah,
I was like, I'm gonna have to remember all these people and stuff. No, it was actually rather easy.
Yeah, it was surprisingly easy. No, and I agree completely, because I think that was one of those things that I was also worried about. In terms of, like, you have all these people, and then they're probably going to bring in more family, and then it's just going to kind of get lost in the noise.
Yeah.
So, but jumping right in, obviously, first impressions after the film. I'm going to go real quick, because I know, Spencer, you're probably going to have a lot more to say than
I already said one of my main things.
Well, obviously, but I know you like to talk. So, my first biggest impression after the film was, this movie is fun. Like, I had a good time. And I'm just talking about, like, I had a good time because, like, I got a chance to throw gummy bears at the person in front of me and I got to shush another baby. No, I mean, this movie was fun because even though there was people talking behind us, next to us, I was still, like, fixated on the screen. Like, this was one of those...
He was kind of fixated on the screen.
There was, like, one... or two people.
You turned. I noticed whenever you turned.
It was just one time.
You pull me out of the movie when you pull out.
It was one time. Yeah. It was one time. But, like, the fact is that I've never been engaged in a movie like this where the outside influences around me could distract me as much. Like, in other films that were really good or whatever, I noticed, like, when we went to go see Endgame, Avengers Endgame, I was more focused. I was more keen on listening to the disruptions and all that because I wanted to hear who was crying and who wasn't. But like other films were like, I could hear people talking, hear people laughing, all these things. I don't remember that being as big of an issue while watching this movie. And there may have been a ton of people laughing and talking, whatever, but it didn't bother me. Because this story was just like, I have to pay attention. I need to see what's going on. I need to know what the heck in the world is happening with this family. And that comes from, like, this just incredible story that Rian Johnson told. So, honestly, first impression was, how do I get on this ride again? You know, what do I need to do to get back on this ride? Because this was fun, and I don't care, even if I know how the movie ends, I still want to go back through this once more because it was great. Was there anything else other than your first statement that were your first impressions?
Yeah, you know what? I want to like also tag on. I was like, yeah, this movie was super fun. Like, if they had said, like, you know what, we're just gonna play the movie one more time for all you people, I'd be like, all right, I guess I'm here for that again.
I'd be like,
all
right, I'll stick around. Shoot. That, no, because it was just like, this movie really kept the heart of what it means to be like a true murder mystery. Like, I, the next day after we went to go see it, I was telling some people that I work with, I was like, yeah, I went to go see an early screening of Knives Out. And they're like, Knives Out? Oh, cool. And one lady was like, you know, I haven't seen a good murder mystery whodunit since Clue. Do you remember Clue? And I'm like, yeah, I do. And you know what? This movie reminds me a bit of Clue. Because Clue was funny.
Yeah.
You had, like, Tim Curry, Christopher Lloyd. You had all these different characters all acting crazy and whatnot in this whodunit murder mystery movie. And every single step, even though people were dying, there were things that were happening that were fun. This whole journey was fun. In a similar vein, this movie taps into the same fun that that was. And I found myself like rolling and laughing. And even though like there were acts that were happening that were heinous and people were dying and stuff was going on, it's like, this is fun. Like, if Rian Johnson ever committed a murder, like, I would want to join his side and be like, how are you going to do this? How are you going to get out of this? I just feel like it would be just one wild ride. One of the great things about this film, as I had already mentioned, is the incredible ensemble, the cast of characters, everybody that is in this movie, from Jamie Lee Curtis to Michael Shannon, Don Johnson, who plays Jamie Lee Curtis's husband, Toni Collette. You got Jaden Martell. All these people, they were incredible as the family. Like, Jamie Lee Curtis is like the oldest. She seems like she's the oldest of the family. She's the one who's... This film really put to light how much better my family dynamic is compared to theirs. Because it's like, the sad truth is, I probably know families that are like this, and it's so great. Like, Jamie Lee Curtis is this prideful, well, you know what? I made my business from the ground up, and it's mine, and blah, blah, blah. Michael Shannon's this one who's like wanting to perch on the shoulders of his father, and Don Johnson is this weird husband who's got skeletons in the closet, and Toni Collette is this... each one of their backstories is incredible. All the way from like all of them to Chris Evans, who plays the son to Don Johnson and Jamie Lee Curtis, which you don't meet him until later into the film.
Which is actually kind of nice, because it gives you a second, like delaying introducing people gives you a second to get used to the people that they're introducing you to.
Yeah, it kind of scaffolds the exposure to certain characters. With Lakeith Stanfield, who's this officer who is doing a new round of asking questions at the bequest, at the request of Daniel Craig, who plays Benoit Blanc, who is this renowned detective, private investigator. Where, here's the funny thing. If I didn't know that Daniel Craig was from the UK, like that he didn't have a British accent or anything like that, I honestly would have thought his Southern accent would have been straight up natural. Because like, this man never, ever broke character in that Southern accent.
Yeah, it was great.
It was incredible. Like, we've had so many instances where there have been quote-unquote stellar performances from other people because of the fact that they've, you know, whatever embodiment they had for their character, they had to do a certain accent, they had to do whatever, and they're like, oh, it was so great, it's this. And it's like, but yeah, but like, you can hear the accent cracking here, or you can hear the accent losing its partial part here. Daniel Craig, from beginning to end, was a Southern gentleman. Like, I honestly wanted to call him Foghorn, because he was like straight up right on the money. And it was fun. Like, Daniel Craig seriously knocked it out of the park. And I don't know what to say other than the fact that, you know what? I want to see more movies from Rian Johnson with Daniel Craig's Benoit Blanc as the detective.
Yeah, no, like, this detective guy was really great. Just from the moment he, like, well, his introduction is not him talking, but from the moment that he just steps onto the screen, like, you know, he's just in every scene, and I'm just here for him and whatever he's trying to do.
Well, and the great thing is, he's not even introduced in the beginning.
No, he's just there.
He's just like this voyeur sitting in the background of all the interrogations, all the questioning, and everybody, every single interrogation comes to that same point, like, excuse me, who are you? And it's like, everybody has their own way of saying it, and it's just the way each character is developed into their own unique way of viewing the family and viewing themselves and viewing their hierarchy within the family. It's so good, and I wish that I would have seen this before I would have seen The Last Jedi. Because I almost wrote this film off. Like, I almost was like, ah, it's Rian Johnson. You know?
Gonna be honest, did not know who was directing it till the end of the movie. And I was like, oh, this guy? This guy directed this movie? And then I immediately started thinking about Star Wars, and I was like, you know what? I feel like I'm learning something about Star Wars here.
We got Disney Plus. We'll check it out. Another stellar performer out of this entire film, Ana de Armas, plays Marta Cabrera, who is the caretaker or in-home nurse for Christopher Plummer's Harlan. Ana de Armas, mind you, her exposure in Blade Runner 2049, the amount of flexibility she had, it was okay. It was good, but it was just okay. She is something else in this movie. Like, I am super glad that they gave this kind of role to somebody like her in terms of capable and strong-willed and just really showing a range of emotions. And it's incredible. Like, you come to find out, which it's something that's given away pretty early in the film, you come to find out she's incapable of lying because the mere thought of lying makes her puke. And that's such a great little, like, a little tool to have for, or a little factor to have to play out in a film of people trying to figure out who killed this man. And it's so much fun. And Ana de Armas is perfect for this role. Like, she looks like somebody who could, you know, be just anybody out there. Like, oh yeah, she's been a part of the family for so long, blah blah blah. So kudos to Ana de Armas. I really hope that they continue to give her more and more opportunities. Because I'm trying to see, it looks like she did a 007 film with Daniel Craig called No Time to Die. Oh no, she's going to do one. Oh,
I was about to say, I've never heard of No Time to Die.
She's going to do one called No Time to Die in the future in 2020. I just got a vision. But
okay, Raven.
Thank you. But like, to be honest, there's not really much in her repertoire prior to like 2012. Not even like maybe 2014, because there's nothing really else there other than that creepy movie she did with Keanu Reeves called Knock Knock. Which is really weird. But, I mean, hey, kudos to her. I'm excited to see her in more stuff. Don Johnson, I think, is the biggest surprise for me. I haven't seen Don Johnson do anything, like, ever. Like, I know he was big on Miami Vice. He's apparently on the Watchmen series, but, like, everything else prior to this has literally been like small potatoes.
Yeah.
There's nothing of really big emphasis of him having a consistent role throughout the whole film. Not just like an appearance, or not just like as a one-off, like he plays Big Daddy in Django Unchained, but that's just a plantation owner in one of the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not a whole thing throughout the whole film. And yeah, like, I'm going through his repertoire, his whole filmography, and nothing substantial, but this film really gives Don Johnson a chance to kind of stretch out his true acting chops and really kind of showcase, like, what's the best way to put this, Spence? An ignorant, older Caucasian male who... who is very much a Trumper, if you will.
Yeah.
Because this movie does get a little political, but only...
Because it's a family gathering.
Because it's a family gathering.
Party. Of course it does.
Don Johnson is that person, and it's hilarious how well he portrays it, which I'm sure Don Johnson is a pleasant person to talk to. I don't think he's anything like this. So...
The best part about that scene was even the subtle things of, like, him
Like, how many times are they going to try to assume where Marta's from? Like, they've said, like, five different countries.
Paraguay. Yeah, they did, and I was like, did she ever say where they were from? Because now I don't remember. Yeah.
No, she never said where she was from, but she never validated anybody's answer, like, oh, thank you for getting that right. Nope. I really enjoyed the thought and the effort put into this film in terms of creating a unique story. Not just unique, because I know that's an overly used word, but like, mm-hmm. a strong and very cohesive story to present to people, you know, who are going to be going to the movies either today, tomorrow, your Thanksgiving Day weekend. You know, this movie really sets the tone now for modern day whodunit movies.
Yeah, it really does.
Like, I don't think there's any other way to put it. Because if you look at this movie, now you're going to see this movie and you're going to be like, wow, that was really good. And then you're going to go and see somebody else's whodunit movie or murder mystery. One that's original. Because that's the key thing here. A lot of people are like, well, you know, Murder on the Orient Express was good. Or, you know, this and this was good. Or blah, blah, blah. But most of them are based on already established works.
Mm-hmm.
So you have something to base it on. Like, it's fine and all. Gone Girl. Even Gone Girl is based on a book. But it's like, yeah, those are all based on prior stuff. Rian Johnson literally wrote this. Like, the director really sincerely wrote this before putting it out there on the big screen. That means the man who knows every intent of every character, the heart of every character in this movie, in this book, he already has it formulated in his head. Like, he already knows the arcs and the stories and who acts like what and what acts like who. And it's like, that's actually really, really cool. And it's not often we get a chance to see something like that.
Which is sad.
Which is very sad. Mind you, okay. Most of the murder mysteries, most of, like, you got a lot of, like, the great detectives of our time, literary detectives of our time. You got Sherlock Holmes. Like I said earlier, you got Hercules Perrault, you know, and so forth and so forth. You know, you got Encyclopedia Brown or Nancy, what's her name?
Nancy Drew.
No, not Nancy Drew.
I don't know any of the Nancys. Unless you're talking about Nancy from Stranger Things.
No.
Her, like, detective agency.
What is the name of that detective girl?
Nancy Drew.
Is it Nancy Drew?
Nancy Drew's a detective girl.
I was getting Nancy Drew mixed up with Nancy Grace. I'm
sorry.
Oh
my gosh. Who the heck's Nancy Grace?
She's that chick from Fox or whatever, the loudmouth lady.
Why? Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. I gotta get that taste out of my mouth now.
Yeah, Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys.
That woman, that scary lady
right
there.
I don't know who this is.
That's Nancy Grace. She watches you while you sleep. With the big poofy. Look at this is her right here with her big poofy hair. I'm gonna eat you, Spence.
Girl. There was a movie we were talking about.
Oh yeah,
that
that's
does
right.
not have this awful pictures of this woman. She has some. She needs to get like someone on her SEO on Google and get some better pictures up there.
Just no, but
rank your pictures higher. Come on,
Nancy, like Nancy Drew and Encyclopedia Brown. You know. Scooby-Doo, you have all these unique previous murder mystery detectives, people who have solved cases and whatnot and blah, blah, blah. I really hope that this is the start of a brand new look into how to make murder mysteries in the modern day and create a new character such as Benoit Blanc. Like, I really... I don't know how strongly I can express this other than I really liked Daniel Craig in this role.
Yeah.
And I really hope, like, if he ever gives up the mantle of 007, just work strictly on these types of movies. Like, I would gladly listen to these all the time or watch these all the time. Like, I'm thinking, like, if he ever does, like, an audiobook series or something. I don't know. Either way, I really think he's got to keep doing this. I really think... that Daniel Craig has really created something alongside with Rian Johnson has created something really great in this character. I do have to say one of the downsides in this series or in this film One of the things that I was kind of like, eh, I really do think Jaden Martell didn't really bring much to the table. Jaden Martell played the kid, Jacob Thrombey.
Oh, the Nazi child?
Yeah, the Nazi child. He's an alt-right conservative or whatever you want to call him. Whatever they called him in the movie. Yeah. Which, mind you...
they called him the Nazi child in the movie.
The sad thing is it's true. Here's the thing. So... The director, Rian Johnson himself, has gone on to say that Jacob Thrombey, Jaden Martell's character, his character was actually influenced by the quote-unquote trolls and also quote-unquote man-babies that voiced their criticisms online over writer-director Rian Johnson's previous film, The Last Jedi. I don't know.
I don't know if I would have portrayed them like that. If I was him,
I don't know. It's like, it's one of those things. It's like, I don't know. Would Rian Johnson be that petty about it? I don't know. Like, it's kind of, yeah, I don't know. You know, what do you think? Do you think that's true?
That he put them in this movie based on his own interactions with them?
Yeah.
I feel like if he did do that, he would have had more to say about it than what he did, which was almost nothing besides the fact, well, they exist and they like bad stuff. Like, he barely really even touched on this topic. Like, you know, he put it out there. It's like, you know, there's an alt-right person in this family and that's kind of it. So it's really kind of hard to glean any like impressions of what he thinks about this.
Look, this is what he told Deadline. He says, anyone who's on Twitter these days, God bless you, because it's rough waters out there. But there's also wonderful stuff about it. That's why we're all still on it, I guess. That's one of the things Knives Out engages with, the current state of online culture. Whether you made a Star Wars movie or you have a cooking show, whatever you're doing on there, someone's going to be screaming at you about it, probably. Let's put it on a screen in a way we can all maybe have a laugh about it. Guess he did. Here's the thing. If he did or didn't, either way, I don't think there's enough exploration of this character in this particular film to really warrant, like, oh, this is the personification of all them trolls. This is definitely his, like, his little jab back at the finger of all those people who were, like, talking negative. Like, if they showed Jaden Martell, like, tearing up, like, a Yoda toy, or, like, or like yeah, hating, like, Star Wars paraphernalia, like, say there's a character here who's, like, a big Star Wars fan, and they show him, like, destroying their lightsaber or doing something like that, then maybe?
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that this is, like, so subtle that it's, like, unless you know, you're gonna blink and you miss it, I don't think it comes across successfully.
No.
Oh, so. But honestly, other than that small little hiccup, the film's spotless. Like, the film's perfect. Yeah. There really isn't any other, you know, really hard stop for me in this film. Every time Jaden Martell, however, was referenced or used, it was just like, you know, the whole alt-right, you know, conservative thing, that's not really...
It's not even a point of this movie.
Yeah, really. It didn't really make a big... splash for me. Not to mention Jaden Martell is probably given like 3 lines in this entire movie.
Yeah, he's so really in the background on his phone most of the movie.
True, very true. Which, I mean, typical teenager.
Yeah.
I mean, if they would have left it at that as just somebody who's like maybe on a version of TikTok all day long, or like he's just been, I don't know, on social media, like maybe that might have been it. But there's nothing that references what he's doing on his phone.
Yeah, but like, what are teenagers doing on their phones? Who knows?
TikTok. Like, literally, that's all they're doing is TikTok. By the way, do you have a TikTok account?
No.
Liar.
I'm part of the old now, so I don't have TikTok.
I have a TikTok account.
Well, you're just trying to grasp at youth now, and that's sad.
No, the videos are funny. But yeah, is there anything else that you want to kind of round out this conversation with?
So I want to talk a little bit about Marta, because she cannot lie in this movie because she throws up.
Yeah.
Like, she is constantly, like, you know, apprehensive about talking because, you know, she likes this family. She doesn't want to spoil all their stuff.
Yeah.
And so for me, this caused a bit of a problem because I have a problem with watching movies and having anxious characters be in the movie because it makes me anxious for what they're going to do. And so just all the times we spent with her in this movie, I'm just like, oh gosh, how could it possibly get any worse? And then it does. And like, it was a ride with, like, I still love this movie.
Yeah.
And I like her as a character, but there's also like this undercurrent for me of just like, oh gosh, we're with Marcus.
You don't like the anxiousness of the character. Okay. Which,
no, like,
which
it's, for it's somebody, hard for me to deal with because I really identify with it probably a bit too much.
Because, okay, I see what you're saying. Like, her anxiousness becomes your anxiousness and you're like,
then I'm like, I'm in the movie, and I didn't want to be in this movie. I just wanted to watch it.
It's true, because, like, she makes a lot of the scenes, because of her inability to, you know, speak any false truths. Like, there's a really great scene. I don't want to put too much out there, but, like, there's a really great scene where she's, like, she's being careful with what she's saying because she doesn't want to hurt the family or she doesn't want to say anything wrong. And she's just like, it's like she's tiptoeing mentally through this like mental minefield, and it's so great because you don't know when it's gonna happen, and you're like, you're waiting for the moment for her to just puke up, and it's so great. Like, the uneasiness is so fun.
Oh,
and
gosh.
I like it.
There's been so, especially where she's going, like, I'm like, just so you know, because it's mostly true.
I mean,
try to answer for
existentially, like, every answer is correct, right? I mean, in some universe or another. and actually, one thing I did want to mention as well, the soundtrack to this movie was actually really good. It was like a really simple soundtrack, almost like a classic whodunit type music. Like, it's not over the top. It's done by Nathan Johnson. And the only reason why I know that is because I was scrolling through the soundtrack to find a good piece for the beginning of this review, and I all the names I was saying, like, oh, Steven Johnson. But the soundtrack is really great. I think this is going to be one of those soundtracks that I'm actually going to take a chance to really listen to over and over, kind of like with what we did with Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Oh, that's a good soundtrack.
Let's see, composer.
But yeah, he hasn't really done terribly many movies before this one. I think he only did two before this.
I believe that. Like, I really do.
Yeah, because they were Looper and The Brothers Bloom. And
So he's worked with Rian Johnson twice. Both of those are Rian Johnson's movies.
Oh.
So it sounds like there's kind of a work relationship between these two guys, which is good.
I can see why, because he's pretty good.
Man, this movie definitely will surprise you, and it's worth watching so much, not just because of the story elements and everything, but every piece that puts this film together, from the music to the lighting, the low lighting, like, almost, it's almost got like an aged feel to it, because it's not exactly super crisp imagery, but it kind of has this, it's almost like a very downplayed color palette to the film, because the vibrant colors and all the unique parts are all the characters, which just shows you that, you know what, your focus is not what's in the background, but it's on the people that are in the scene. And I think there's a lot of great little clues in this film that, if you follow, will really give you a really interesting outlook on how the film evolves over the course of the whole time. So wrapping this thing up, because honestly, we're not going to talk spoilers. I don't want to give away the ending, because then that would give away the entire movie.
Yeah.
And there's no point in doing that. There's no fun in that at all. So I guess we'll just go ahead and start wrapping this up. And let's go ahead and go across the table. Start with you, Spence. And does the film pass or fail, or how? And how many monocles? Not or. And.
No, I'll do or. I'll only tell you one of the two.
The mystery. The plot thickens.
No, this movie passes for me. It's a really well done movie. It's a great murder mystery movie. I don't know if I've really seen any before. But yeah, I love this because, you know, it keeps you guessing. Even when it's like, the movie's going this way, like it might for a second and then just turn on you. And I feel like that's really how a good murder mystery movie should be going, is that you might not know where it's going all the time, and it keeps you on the edge of your seat, and I just loved it. So I'm going to give it a 4.5 because I was really impressed with this one.
4.5?
Yeah.
That's actually, you know what, that's about at the same level as to where I see it at, because to be quite honest, this film really embodies something unique and new to the cinematic world that we haven't really experienced, and that is just a great experience with a murder. Like, how many times can you say that with a murder mystery film? Like, you had fun because somebody died. Like, that's really a hard stop for a lot of people. Like,
Eddie,
I don't know if that's the kind of date I'm looking for, but you know, I'm up. I mean, this isn't Florida, I know. But this film really does do a great job of creating the sense of anticipation, the sense of dread, the sense of obviously in Spencer's case, anxiousness.
That's so bad.
this movie, it has so many great lines in it. It has so much great fun. The whole scene where, like, there's a really fun car chase, and one of the characters calls the other one like, "Come on, baby driver," and it's like, I know that reference. It's great. This movie is just so much fun. You're gonna get such a kick out of it. So it passes for me. And as well, I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5. This is a must-see movie. I'm earnestly going to go back to the theaters, and I'm going to go pay again to see this movie and watch it several times over. And I know this is one of those ones that I'm also going to pre-order on digital. And I want to see all the lovely goodness of, like, all the behind-the-scenes stuff. The whole... I want to hear Craig Daniels really try to explain how he got to that accent, because that accent is just something I need to know, bottom line. So that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out at our website at filmlosophers.com, where all of our episodes are at, all 190 something. You got Thanksgiving break, you should listen to them all. Also, you can check us out on social media at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on our Twitter page at filmlosophy101, as well as our Instagram page at filmlosophy101. This was a great episode, and mind you, this movie, it does drop today, but if you get a chance to see it later, that's fine. Spend some time with family. You got Thanksgiving, you got family time. We really hope, from the bottom of our heart here at the Filmlosophers, we hope that everybody out there who celebrates Thanksgiving or is just experiencing a day of just giving thanks for something, we hope you guys have a great and awesome time. Because I know me and Spence are going to be spending our times eating turkey and getting gobbled up in all the new movie trailers, and everything is going to be dropping Thanksgiving Day, because that's what they do. But, of course, we want to wish everybody who's listening a great and wonderful Happy Thanksgiving. Right, Spence?
Yeah.
Also, we want to remind you, December 9th, we have an awesome upcoming trivia night, a complete extravaganza of Star Wars trivia. So if you're in the Sacramento area, head on over to Oblivion Comics and Coffee and try to come down and compete, because you may win some awesome and wonderful prizes. You don't know. You don't know me.
You don't know until you've tried.
You don't know until you've tried. That's the motto of Spence this entire season.
Yeah, and I believe it's going to be Star Wars themed, correct?
It is Star Wars themed. We got a lot of fun stuff. We got a lot of great prizes. There's going to be a lot of teams out there that are going to be wanting to sign up, because this is a very competitive city for trivia. So if you get the chance, please head over to our Facebook page. That's where we're going to post the link for the actual sign-up sheet, because there is a sign-up sheet. For the actual sign-up sheet to get on the teams, get your teams listed, get all into the information. And, yeah. So we would love to see you out there. We love talking with people who are listeners. It's going to be great. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
We want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving and, of course, class dismissed.